This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
I had a hunch you might be a real romantic.
We were decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for him.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is broke right now.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are spotlighting the Jewish International Film Festival as a means of exploring queer Jewish cinema, which is something that we've come to time and again on Outtakes because it is such rich and fertile grounds from boundary-pushing TV series like Transparent and, of course, Angels in America, and even The Nanny.
You mentioned that again.
The Nanny? The Nanny?
You know what, Daniel, I'm going to ban you from mentioning Angels in America. That's the last time. You've got a six-month moratorium.
And The Nanny, when we got Yossi and Jagger, that gorgeous
Well, exactly. So there's so much excellent and engaging and really raw film, and I think it's about how, as a minority group, I think a lot of themes that Jews have to face and issues that Jews have to face resonate in the queer consciousness.
Absolutely.
Ideas of being an outsider, ideas of otherness, ideas of persecution. These are themes that come up quite a bit in Jewish-leaning content, Jewish-leaning on-screen content, and it comes up in queer content. Yeah. So it's no surprise that when we get really strong Jewish queer content, it is kind of boundary pushing, and it is edgy, and it is raw, and it is genuine and authentic. It feels that way.
Absolutely. And we do get that. And Gina and I were actually just discussing off air again how we come back to Jewish film and Jewish content in this program, and how this really feeds into
I love
our
it.
Into
I'm
our
learning.
You know, and I have mentioned this before about how Jew curious we are, both the pair of us now. I almost feel as if I'm imbibing some of that Jewish culture, and I almost feel a little bit Jewish.
Well, because you love a bit of Israeli cinema, don't you, Alan?
What are we talking about there? Is there a subtext to that, Daniel?
I'm just saying you like what...
Produce some really good
work. I do like Israeli film, without a doubt.
And that's the thing, because I know very much, you know, a lot about my Greek culture and Italian culture, because that's what I've grown up with. And I've grown in suburbs with, you know, big, you know, Vietnamese communities, and I understand their culture from living with them. So that's
and
what
I will never forget how much you fangirled over Anna Kokkinos when we had her on the program.
Okay,
so
just because she's Greek and she doesn't want to be labelled a queer filmmaker.
I think, you know, something we come back to time and time again on this program is the importance of seeing ourselves on the screen and the importance of representation, and not just the importance of representation or 2D representation, but the importance of intersectionality on the screen as well. So for us as queer audiences, and certainly for me as a queer Jewish man or a gay Jewish man, it's really important to see representations of queer Jewish people on the screen.
Well, I have seen myself, and that's why Anna Kokkinos I'm a fan of from Only the Brave. Have we seen a young Jewish
Oh, we have. We've seen so much of it.
Which film? Would you? Maybe we'll let
Well, my, one of my
that,
favorites is Yossi, which we actually looked at when we spotlighted Israeli queer Israeli cinema, and there is a podcast of that available. But we can't chatter on for the rest of the evening. We do have two guests in the studio. We need to introduce them. So thank you very much to Lindy and Eddie Tarmir for joining us. You are both, am I correct in saying you're both festival directors?
Absolutely. We're co-directors. Thanks for having us, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for coming.
And I'm actually interested that you're feeling a bit Jewish, which is great. I think everyone's like a little bit Jewish and a little bit Irish and maybe a little bit gay. Who knows?
And Greek.
And a little bit Greek. Sure.
You know what? I'm going to do that DNA check just to see what percentage is in my family tree, because, you know, you just never know.
You never know.
Until you go
wishful
digging.
Wishful thinking, Alan.
We're not here to talk about DNA.
No, now, Eddie, you run Classic, Lido and Cameo, that's right? The Holy Trinity of cinemas?
Yep, they're our Holy Trinity. I wonder which is the... The
yeah. No, I have.
There are ghosts in old cinemas, by the way.
In Lido? Okay. When you came in, all I could say was, oh my God, thank you for Lido, because I live out in those burbs. Is there
and
a ghost?
You do
thanks for supporting us.
Well, I wanted to bring that up because you do some really great. Before we get to GIF, you do some really great stuff at Lido. And I was there yesterday for your I have to say yes, don't I? I can't say yes.
Go for yes.
Film festival. Yeah.
And this is not the town just outside Canberra. This is not yes. This is like,
but
yes.
What I loved about it was you did it because of the current political climate. You did it to, correct me if I'm wrong, but to make a statement about the support of your cinema for our community. And we...
Definitely. We definitely didn't do it to make money, that's for sure. Because you were there, right? Well, did you count the heads?
I wasn't going to say anything, Eddie. I was in the session of Weekend, which is a film by Andrew Hay that we have looked at before on this program.
Yep.
And I was telling you just a moment ago how grateful I was for having an opportunity to see it on the big screen, because I didn't catch it on the big screen when it came out. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so important to have retrospectives like this where people who didn't catch these landmark films, and the films you were showing yesterday as part of the festival were actually landmark films.
Yep,
really.
And I can't take all the credit for the program. Our team, our marketing team in particular, really put their heads together to create the program, which we're really proud of.
Well, I did not stop. I have not stopped thinking about Weekend.
But
since seeing it again.
Also, to give a bit of kudos and a bit of backstory, I have been working with people in the Boroondara area to put up yes posters because there were none. And Lido was one of the places where we were given a yes to put in up a yes poster. We did not get many yeses. So the community is looking for these safe places. And, you know, that doesn't sell tickets, but it makes us feel safe. So thank you for that.
But the other thing I do just want to say while we have an opportunity is that we go on a lot, as we've already alluded to, about the importance of representation. But as queer audiences, LGBTI people watching films, it's really important for us to support queer film as well and to support festivals like Yas Festival. So, you know, I was really grateful to have an opportunity to go, and I hope you do run a festival like that again, and I hope that there are lots of bums on seats.
And it was actually Lindy's idea.
Oh, well thank you, Lindy.
Just to give credit where credit's due.
Now, we're not, as much as I'd love to spend the full hour talking about Weekend, because I love that film, we're not talking about Weekend. We're talking about this wonderful festival that you've brought us, and you've been bringing it up to us for quite a how many years is it now?
We've been running it for 6 years.
6 years, okay.
There's actually been Jewish film festivals in Australia for 28 years.
Okay.
In line with the French film festival. So it definitely goes back, and it's had a long history, but yeah, 6 years for us.
Fantastic. And what's the I suppose, the purpose of the festival?
Mm. Good question. One of the key things, because we own and operate cinemas, one of the key things is to make our cinemas compelling.
Yeah.
And having unique product and unique environments and unique conversations. So in order to do that, you need to have unique product. So when we took over 6 years ago and decided to run it, that was, I guess, one of the key ingredients. And because, I guess, for me personally, being, you know, of Israeli parentage and being brought up as an Australian Jew, the whole Israeli, the whole convergence of, you know, Israeliness and Jewishness and diaspora Jewishness kind of smashes around inside me. And so what we try to do in our festival is bring, I guess look through life through the very specific Jewish lens and, you know, explode out into the universal stories of them all. And that's the idea.
Because it is a very specific lens. And what I love about it is, to the layperson, the layperson would ask, well, you know, can you have a festival? Can you sustain a festival every year that focuses just on Jewish cinema? But, of course, you watch hundreds of films each year that you don't even put into the festival.
Yeah. A film a day keeps a doctor away. That's pretty much what we do to program the festival.
Well, this festival,
we feel your feel your pain, because Daniel here is a very hard taskmaster, and he sets He sets a lot of work for us for that this show. Work. We watch a lot of film. Not as much as you, but some weeks, I tell
actually,
you.
Actually, that's...
You're still going back to Elizabeth Taylor's 12
It's a part-time
hours.
Job.
To be fair, really. The record amount of hours that we've watched for film for this program was our Elizabeth Taylor episode, and that was Gina's fault.
So. Only because I made you watch Giant, but...
18.5 hours in that 1 week alone. So a film a day.
It's impressive.
A film a day, you say.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, so how many... you're showing 65 films, and as Daniel was saying, we've got 26 countries that have submitted films. How many did you actually have to select from for this year alone?
Films? Seriously, film a day is not a joke. So we would watch, you know, about 300 films-ish. Wow. To compile the program, for sure.
And does it ever get old? did you ever say to yourself, oh, gee, I just can't be bothered doing this today?
You know, not really, actually, because there's just something about it every time. And the kind of really crazy thing, and I don't know about you guys when you do your 8.5 hours a week, but I actually watch the films through. To the end.
Right. Are you ever
even, like, regardless?
Yeah.
Regardless, I don't know why. It's either respect for the filmmaker or because I'm just so habituated to just seeing what happens and trusting the journey and hoping that there's something in there of value that I just watch the whole thing. And, you know, some of those journeys are particularly questionable.
I've only ever once walked out of a cinema early. And that was because I was feeling a bit unwell and the film wasn't that great. But, yeah, I have to sit through. I cannot.
What is that? That's not even good for us to do that.
Well, I used to take that approach, but I'm not ashamed to admit. I stand by the fact that if I'm not compelled and if I'm not loving the characters
the
or wanting by midway through a film, then, like, good. I just, you know, I've stopped. Stop making
that's
myself watch a film.
I think that's kind of wise.
Yeah.
But, well, I mean, I haven't learned from that.
So, I mean, we were talking a bit. I want to talk about the festival broadly, but obviously I also want to spotlight some of the key, what we'd call queer Jewish films that are showing. I don't know. How do you feel about us talking about the film, some of the films that are showing in that way?
Fantastic.
Do you think that...
And as I'm going through the list, it's amazing that there's probably two that you don't know about that I've just as I'm just unearthing, you know, my files in my brain, you know, more and more are coming to me.
And I love that because, you know, it doesn't take two men falling in love or a love triangle between people of the same sex to make a film queer. That's not what queer cinema is necessarily about. So I love that so much Jewish cinema, I feel, really has a very queer sensibility to it.
Right. Okay. So define queer sensibility.
Well, when we talk about queer cinema, there are so many things that can make a film queer. So, funnily enough, a lot of the directors that we have coming through this program, including the director of The Cake Maker, which is a film that you're screening as part of the festival, take umbrage to their films being called queer because they are queer filmmakers. They argue, and certainly Ophir, when I spoke to Ophir, the maker of The Cake Maker, Ophir argued that it's a travesty, and that's Luca Guadagnino's term, but it's a travesty to call films queer because their makers are queer. Rather, a film is queer because it feels queer. It somehow resonates in the queer psyche. And for me, that's certainly what makes a film more powerful when it is kind of queer-leaning. So there are, you know, a number of films like, off the top of my head, a film like Oy Vey, My Son Is Gay, which is clearly a camp Jewish farce, but it's not as queer as some other films, like, for instance, The Cake Maker, which has a very queer kind of heart and beat, and it's not about... The Cake Maker, for instance, has been savaged by some gay critics for having more heterosexual sex than it does gay sex. And
outrageous.
We'll leave that to one side, but the point is, it doesn't take gay sex in a film to make a film queer.
I'm surprised by that, actually. Yeah. Sure.
And just something, Gina, that just is clicking into my brain when you're talking about 26 countries, and you, Daniel, talking about the, you know, the kind of convergence of sensibility of, you know, Jewish and queer perspectives. The, you know, the outsider, the kind of, you know, empathic approach to, you know, a hopefully empathic approach to humanity. Sure. Something about the fact that, you know, the Jewish people are spread over 26 countries and beyond, and I guess so is the gay community. So, you know, that's kind of interesting. So a lot of the national, you know, film festivals, and there are 49 of them or something in Australia at the moment, you know, it's very specific to a country.
Yeah.
So it's a different ball game. It's just a different ball game to having a Jewish perspective on the world than it is, and, you know, and a queer one, and than, say, having an Italian, a German, a French one.
So I wonder, Eddie, if that makes your life easier or harder, but I'm going to get you to hold off on answering. We'll be back with more with Eddie Tamir, the festival director of the Jewish International Film Festival, and more on queer Jewish cinema right after this.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are exploring and celebrating queer Jewish cinema, and we're doing it as a means of spotlighting the Jewish International Film Festival, which is on screens now at Classic Cinemas and Lido Cinemas. And we have the festival director of the Jewish International Film Festival, Eddie Tamir, still in the studio. So thank you for sticking around, Eddie.
Yep, still here.
Now, we were chatting before about how you draw together cinema from pretty much every corner of the globe for this festival. And I was wondering whether that makes your life as a festival director easier or harder.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's just so exciting.
Yeah.
You know, everything, you know, any film is possible, you know, is a possible entry for us.
And we were trying to convert you into thinking about the way that so much of Jewish cinema is very queer in its kind of sensibility. And you were saying that, you know, as you were sitting here, there were films that were kind of coming to mind that are showing at this festival that you think kind of meet that queer Jewish framework.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you know, content and theme, clearly, and character.
Yeah.
But there's ones that aren't obvious when you read the synopsis and even, you know, having seen them and we've actually screened them, that the particular, you know, queer perspective was not screaming out at me until we were just talking. So, for example, a very difficult titled film called Heaven in Auschwitz, which I don't think you guys picked up is an amazing, obviously true story. It's a documentary about a guy called Freddie Hirsch. Freddie Hirsch was a Jewish youth movement leader in Czechoslovakia. He ends up in Theresienstadt concentration camp as well as Auschwitz ultimately. And he was in charge of the children's barracks in Theresienstadt and in Auschwitz.
Wow.
And he created, the most poetic, colourful safe haven for the kids in these two hellholes, and it's his story.
Wow.
Sounds heartbreaking.
Yeah. It doesn't.
At the same time.
But, you know, I do have to ask you, because you've also brought us the Holocaust film series traditionally for a number of years. There is a lot of content about the Holocaust and we just keep seeing it. Why is that?
Yeah. So, well, it's because I've thought about this myself and grappled with it, and grappling with it is actually the issue. Is it's like, you know, this wild, you know, fish.
Yeah.
You can't get a grip on it, on the Holocaust. You just can't get a grip on it. Doesn't matter how many times you hear a story and how many different angles, and there's always a new one, and we're always kind of exploring and digging into it because you just can't believe it.
Yeah.
And so therefore it's just this infinite journey to just make sense of things.
Yeah.
Whereas that documentary, I've never seen that story being told before. What was it called again?
It's called Heaven in Auschwitz.
We've actually run two programs on queer Holocaust cinema. So I just want to point our listeners to those podcasts, which are available at joy.org.au/outtakes. We've looked at a number of queer Holocaust films. But there are some other films as well, Eddie, that you were saying were jumping out at you as kind of queer Jewish films.
Our criteria is complex for our film choice. So, for example, films made in Israel, we have a different criteria to films made in the diaspora.
That's
in inverted commas.
Yes.
So diasporic is pretty routine, theme, character, story.
For people
that resonates, in a Jewish...
For some people who are listening that don't know what the diaspora is.
Well, From a Jewish perspective, Israel is the homeland, yeah. and outside Israel is the diaspora, which I think okay. is the same with the Greeks. Mm-hmm. Greek is the homeland, and everywhere else is and the Melbourne. Diaspora for Greeks, right?
And Melbourne.
And Melbourne. Oh, sorry. Clearly. Yeah, that's right.
According to my mother.
Right. So, so the criterion Israel is, you know, because it's the coalface of Jewish history, it's a bit different from our point of view.
Right.
Pretty much anything that happens in Israel, therefore, resonates with Jewish experience at some level. Sure. Which brings me to the film In Between, which is an amazing film about three young Arab Israeli chicks who live in Tel Aviv. One, is a career woman. One's a DJ who happens to be gay.
Yep.
And the other one is like a frum. Frum is a Jewish word for being very religious. She's a frum Muslim. And she has a bit of, you know, a huge drama with her husband. And she then seeks out her mates from the old days in Tel Aviv, in the wildness of Tel Aviv. And that's where the story unfolds, and it just gives you an amazing snapshot. And the Israeli Oscars were just held, mm-hmm. and In Between won Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor.
Fantastic.
Hollywood Reporter quoted, sparkling, taboo-breaking, and an end to the stereotype Palestinian woman. And there's a lesbian in it.
There you go. Go for it.
I love Brilliant. Some taboo breaking.
Yeah, definitely.
Love
yeah.
it.
And of course, The Cake Maker and The Last Goldfish, which we'll be speaking to the filmmakers behind both of those sure. productions later in the program. There was a short film as well.
It's yep. playing with a cake maker called The Devil Wears a Suit.
So this is a very special film for us because the filmmaker Ellie Makowski is our son Benji's best friend.
Oh really?
And so he's grown up in our house and we know him very well, and he is the most passionate, you know, erudite, you should get him on, filmmaker who just made this short film. This is VCA graduation awesome. Film.
Really?
And the film just won, what's the queer short film festival?
Queer Screen.
Is it Frames or overseas?
Overseas.
Frames.
Gina.
How many film festivals has your little short
50.
Film?
50. And Frameline was the biggest one.
Right,
and
so I'm not sure if it's that one.
You could not remember its name.
Okay. There's over 200 queer festivals around the world.
Lindy's doing some research in the background. but it's one of the biggest and in America, and he just won it and for his graduation Hold film. Down. And it's so fascinating because it's about what it's like to grow up being gay in Melbourne, in Jewish Melbourne, in very, you know, not necessarily ultra-Orthodox Jewish Melbourne, but in just, you know, secular, humanist, you know, Jewish Melbourne, with all the dramas, with a bit of religiosity thrown in. It's really clever. It's got a sci-fi angle to it.
I was about to say, yeah, the sci-fi angle.
Yeah, it's got a sci-fi angle to it. It's very interesting, and he's a very interesting filmmaker.
Wow, so
I wanted to actually ask, you've got a short film fund that you support. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yeah, so we, you know,
this is it year, there to find this new year was the local talent?
Or? Absolutely. Yeah. This year was the first film we did it. So it's the GIF Short Film Fund, and we sent out, you know, a shout out to all Australian filmmakers and said, you know, if there's anything that you've got in mind that has, you know, resonates with the Jewish experience at some level, mm-hmm. Then submit your scripts. And we had two amazing, you know, really professional judges in the process, and we granted two films $5,000 each, and they made them, and they premiered at GIF this year.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And they're both Melbourne filmmakers. And both, very different films, and both really good in their own way.
Awesome.
Are you planning on doing that again next
year? We are planning to do that again next year. Look, I've been around a bit. I've worked as a producer a bit, as a really bad actor for a bit. I did the RMIT screenwriting course and sort of never
very good one,
got to finish a screenplay, a feature one, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I know how hard it is to make any film, even a SHIT one, let alone a good one.
Yeah.
So, you know, yes, we can curate and show stuff that other people have made, but to be involved at the coalface, to actually be reading scripts and to be, you know, granting money to, you know, creatives is a very exciting dimension for us in the festival, and we're going to do more of it.
That's great.
Well done. Fantastic. I love what you're doing with the festival, and I love what you're doing with your cinemas too. For people who do want to find out more about the festival, because we are rapidly running out of time, Eddie, where should people go?
Well, firstly, you can just, you know, take your human selves to the Lido and the Classic.
You see me there in person, eating Choc Tops.
Eating Choc Tops. Yeah, Gina's there eating Choc Tops in a corner as an ad for Choc Tops. So just, you know, drop in there,
talk about stuff. A good coffee yesterday. It was a good coffee.
Very good.
And thank you. Can I just say quickly, before we run out of time, that have you redone the Classic recently? Because I was there Friday and I didn't recognise
We have, absolutely.
You're constantly renovating and improving, and it's always an experience going to
We're definitely. Thank you very much for noticing, but we're definitely renovating. We're adding four more screens at the Classic.
Oh, fantastic.
To take us to an Artiplex 10.
Now, I do want to know what the top picks are for the festival, the must-sees.
They don't have to be queer, by the way.
No, they don't have to be queer. No, we want your must-sees, your top three films that we must see.
Of course. So Keep the Change is a very special film which won the Tribeca Film Festival Best Feature Film this year.
Awesome.
And it's about a young man and woman who meet at a support group in the Jewish Community Center in Manhattan. And they're both, the characters are both on the spectrum. And as it happens, the two actors are both on the spectrum. And it's amazing, surprising.
Now, you see, coming back to my point about queer sensibility, I just want to point out what Variety said about Keep the Change. Variety said, it is an ode to self-discovery and acceptance that is as funny as it is sweet. And you see, that is as someone who's thinking about queer cinema all the time for this program, I would look at that and I would say, I need to see that film because it sounds pretty queer to me. Those are themes that will resonate in a queer consciousness, I think.
Sure. Yeah, you mean... Self-acceptance is queer.
So, well, it is
the
something.
Journey, the journey.
It is something that we see a lot of in queer cinema. Mm-hmm.
That's very Jewish.
Which is why we say that there's a great intersectionality between the two. Yeah,
Eddie, I'm sorry I interrupted you. So another film that...
Yeah, 1945 is a very special film. Brand new Hungarian film. Filmmaker's coming out actually in a couple of weeks to do a Q&A with us. And it's just been released in the US. Glowing reviews, very special contemporary film, but made about, set in 1945, black and white, with the most amazing perspective on a Hungarian village and the crimes and misdemeanors of the local population.
So as you're speaking, Alan is scrolling through your website, desperately trying to find the rough...
I've got it.
I watched the trailer to this. I thought it looked very interesting to me because this is where... this is after the Second World War and this is where Jewish people come back to the village. Well, so this is like... this is
not to a big celebration welcome home party either.
The reason I... interesting to see what the fallout is the recriminations.
I bring it up because I want to point out that people, before they do, you know, if they want to peruse the program, it's www.gif.com.au.
Easy to find.
So you can... And check out the Lido and Classic Cinema websites as well because there is... we rave about Call Me By Your Name all the time and you've got a few Q&As coming up for Call Me By Your Name.
Absolutely. And it's going to be featuring on our rooftop, Lido Rooftop Cinema.
Awesome.
So a lot to see. Check out the websites. We've run right out of time, but thank you so much for joining us this evening. Eddie and Lindy, it's been a pleasure having you both in the studio.
Thanks for having us. We've had fun. Thanks. See you at the movies.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9. More on queer Jewish cinema and our chats with the filmmakers behind The Last Goldfish and The Cake Maker coming up right after this.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where tonight we are celebrating and exploring queer Jewish cinema. And that was a really wonderful chat that we had with Eddie Tamir, the festival director of the Jewish International Film Festival. Eddie also runs Classic, Lido and Cameo. And you know, I really appreciate what Eddie is doing for the community, not just the Jewish community, but the queer community too,
and also the filmmaking community.
Exactly,
and effectively, they're a patron for short filmmakers.
It's so
with, you know, $5,000 a piece for each of these filmmakers.
Which, can I say, as a young aspiring filmmaker, not me personally, but for a young aspiring filmmaker, that's really important.
And what an amazing opportunity, and especially if you happen to be a young Jewish filmmaker as well. Yeah. I mean, wow. Yeah. I mean, there can't be too many opportunities for that here in Australia. So, well
done. Now, we are turning our attention now to a film showing at the festival that we've already talked about a little bit. The film is The Cake Maker.
It made me hungry watching this, can I just say? Oh, sugary sweet. Sorry. Uh-huh. Sorry, I got you off track there. Yes, The Cake Maker.
It looked like our main character would like to eat a few cakes too, don't you think?
Oh, Alan.
Alan.
A 200th show. That's going to come back.
I'm not saying.
You know what? I was quite happy to see that it was a healthy young man in a lead role.
He's a good-looking chap.
He's very good-looking,
you know,
man.
He's built,
six-pack. He eats cakes and cookies.
Listen, he did have a six-pack. It's just that he was built like a brick shithouse, really. I mean, like, it was impressive stuff.
So The Cake Maker is the new film from filmmaker Ophir Raoul Grazer, who we sat down with, and we're going to play our interview with Ophir in a moment. But, you know, this is a controversial film. We said before, the film is a film about, it's about a Israeli gentleman who flies down for work to Germany once a month, mm-hmm. to Berlin. And while he's there, he conducts this illicit affair with a baker, a male baker, mm-hmm. Whose biscuits he happens to really like. And his wife really likes the biscuits too.
I think he also likes his buns.
Well,
there's your hint.
Well, we don't actually know, because we don't really see that in the film, do we? And that's one of the controversies about the film. But getting back to what actually happens in this film, the Israeli gentleman dies fairly early on in the film.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
in a car accident. It's an accident.
Yes.
It is, yeah. And in mourning, this cake maker travels to Israel.
To Jerusalem.
To start kind of stalking the wife of this man.
And that's what's really uncomfortable
and
about
starts
this
starts an illicit affair with her.
Again?
Well, I think we should
another
say
level
that
of uncomfortableness in watching that.
And say that he's the widow runs a cafe in Jerusalem.
Oh, Alan, that's not his name.
And
the widow. You said the widow runs.
No, the widow.
The widow.
The widow. The widow. This is the.
We'll get you back on track eventually.
I think her name is Anat. Anat is the widow of Oren, who's the man who dies. Widow.
Can I say she was fabulous?
She was
brilliant. Magnificent.
She was brilliant, without a doubt. And also, also her young the actor who plays her young son.
The thing about this film is that food. I know, Jeannie, you were salivating watching this film, and food is used in this film as a bridge, because this film really is about identity divides and the way that identity divides us. It's about the divide between secularism and Judaism, about the divide between Israel and Germany, about the divide between different sexualities, and about how a food, but also emotions like desire and grief, can bridge those divides. Mm-hmm. So this is fundamentally, I think, a film about identity and a film about how our humanity can bridge those identitarian divides.
Mm. I might take that last bit as a comment. I did. I will say I. You know what I loved about this film, and this is the stuff Alan and I were talking about, it taught me so much more about kosher and culture and that German, you know, non-Israeli kind of how people interact within the one community together. And I loved learning about that and the Shabbat.
Shabbat dinner.
Why have we not been invited to yours for Shabbat?
The bread maker has been in Jerusalem for all of 5 minutes, and he gets an invite for Shabbat for Friday night.
Where's Daniel?
Can I take that as a comment?
Yeah, well, you can take that as a comment.
Can I say, you two have been renovating your houses for I don't know how long, and where was my invite to see the finished product?
It's still coming.
Well, we're throwing each other under the bus.
It's coming.
But honestly, that was my favourite part part of this film, watching the culture and watching, you know, the characters interacting and kind of, yeah, him crossing the line and making the mistakes that I would make if I walked in.
Although I've got to say, this is really, it's quite pathological, this film. It really is. It is disturbing. And how we've got this character who is, it goes so much beyond stalking. It goes beyond single white female. It is pathological.
You
and it's
say
so
that
wrong.
But you judging the character because
I am, and I feel entitled.
No, fair enough. And I love that when cinema kind of evokes that response from you, because I think that Ophir has been very non-judgmental in the way that he's made this film. He doesn't judge his characters. We as an audience judge them, and I think that says something really interesting. Mm-hmm. But the camera doesn't judge.
No.
And actually that was something that I asked Ophir when I sat down with him. I asked him about why he decided to take this very non-judgmental approach to Alan What You're Right is a very dubious situation.
It's a film about two people from two countries, from two cultures, from two different backgrounds who end up meeting in a little cafe in Jerusalem and slowly find out that they both share, let's say, the same grief or the same sorrow for the same person. It's a story about a man from Berlin, a baker, a conditor, has a really nice cafe, and one of his, let's say, permanent customers in the cafe is an Israeli guy who comes to Berlin once a month because of his job. And this Israeli guy, his name is Oren, he has a wife, he has a son, he has a nice, good job in Jerusalem, he's coming from Jerusalem, but whenever he comes to Berlin, to this cafe, eating the cakes of this German conditor, he's having an affair with him. Mm. He's actually having a double life.
The way that you tell this story is very non-judgmental, and I think that's really important because it enables us to develop relationships with the characters. But why did you choose to approach the story in such a non-judgmental way?
I come from a very judgmental place. I mean, I was born and raised in Israel in a little city called Ra'anana, which is a very very white, clean, very maturistic, patriotic city. I mean, we had I learned in a high school which was famous for having the biggest amount of pilots in the army.
Okay.
And all these values of nationality and patriotism and maturism, all this, I mean, I grew up on these values.
Yeah.
And I always resisted them. I always resisted them. I always felt that I'm not a part of this, definitions, because I think they are just how can I say it nicely, bullshit. I mean, it's not like all, it's all lies and schemes. I mean, there is no nationality, and there is no patriotism, and there is no value to flags and to guns. The value is for the real values are for emotions, for feeling, for human life. So I cannot judge any of these people, because I think that all of them have their own pain and all of them have their own, secret and their own suffering. And
I really appreciate that you say that, because this is a film about grief and desire and these very kind of humane emotions and the way that they can really bridge such strong differences, or what we are traditionally led to believe are strong differences.
Yeah, it's all things that come from my own life. I mean, it's the things that I know well. I mean, I've been living between Berlin and Jerusalem the last almost 8 years. I'm on the line between Berlin and Jerusalem. And my father is religious, my mother is secular. I came from a home where I was always conflicted between these two values, and it's still a part of me today. For me, it's about breaking this definition, breaking down this whole nationality, religion, sexuality also. It's not saying, for example, Thomas, there's a lot of people ask me, is he gay, is he not gay? And my answer is always like this. I mean, I don't care. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, yes, I would say that logically, why he is a homosexual, and what happens between him and not is not a classical love affair. It's not that he's becoming straight.
Yeah.
It's not about that at all, you know?
In a way, it really kind of undoes the authority that we take these identity categories with. I mean, it really shows us that they're quite useless at the end of the day.
Yes, they are useless. And I was criticized by some of the, let's say, the LGBT, mostly the, well, not the LGBT, that's not true. It was more by the gay.
Okay.
Let's say some film critics, for example, I was kind of criticized for how do I dare to make a queer movie where there is more heterosexual sex than homosexual sex.
Okay, and how do you respond to that kind of criticism then?
Well, I mean, I would accept any criticism because the moment the film is out there on the screen, it's no longer mine. But this thing specifically, I have a strong a political problem.
Yeah.
Because first of all, I'm not saying this is a gay or queer movie. I don't define this movie as a queer movie. I define this film as a movie, you know.
Yeah.
And I completely resist the definition of gay cinema or queer cinema. I think that it was crucial for many, many years to have this kind of definition. And it is still crucial in some places in the world, but let's say in the most of the world, it's not about definition, it's about separation. It's about placing, I mean, the moment you defy something as gay or as lesbian, so maybe there's a danger that you separate it from the rest. And I think that, let's say, politically our goal, or what I feel is correct, in my opinion, is to not having this separation. I mean, to have like a normal film festival, for example, without a gay section, but just a normal film festival where some of the films happen to be gay.
How then, Ophir, do you feel about the Cake Maker screening then at a Jewish film festival?
Well, I mean, I think it's the same thing. Again, I think that the question is how long do we want to, let's say, separate these themes? Sexual identity and religious identity are not the same. Because sexual identity is something coming from the very inside of the person, genetically even, you know? It's something which, I mean, I feel that, I know in my case I was born with it, but religious identity is it's a cultural thing. It's something that you can connect to or not connect to, and it's a bit of a different definition.
It's a controversial position to take.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I mean I'm saying it. I'm not saying it from again. I'm not trying to be judgmental. I completely accept the fact that it's still necessary because, like I said before, you know, we don't live in a perfect world. We are actually living in a world which goes back. It takes the place back, you know? I mean that the world is not becoming more liberal and more open. The world, generally speaking, is becoming more religious, more right-wing, more conservative. We are going backwards.
It is becoming more conservative, that's true.
So I'm saying that it is necessary to fight for our identity, for our existence, for our rights. It's absolutely, absolutely necessary, and that's why it is important to still have this this fight or this definition in the air. But I would say that what you should aspire to is to live in a world where these definitions don't matter anymore.
Well, that was Ophir Raoul Graitzer, the director of The Cake Maker, and I apologize to Ophir because I'm sure I've butchered his name like I do to most of our guests, but really interesting chat. I mean, some very controversial statements there.
Without a doubt.
More power to him, but obviously we don't agree at Outtakes with the position that queer cinema is
a non-entity.
Not necessary. Sorry. I think that seeing ourselves on the screen as queer audiences is fundamentally important and critical. Mm-hmm. And I think we need far more of it.
And this whole thing, you know, it's like, to be labelled a queer filmmaker, like that's a bad thing?
It seems to be. There seems to be a real queer phobia amongst queer filmmakers.
Or well, some would never like it.
It's got to do with the dollar, doesn't it? Because
Like
we know, like let's be honest, things are getting better in Hollywood, and Hollywood is the beacon of filmmaking, even though the best films don't always come out of Hollywood, but we know that things are getting better, but it's still hard as a queer actor or as a queer filmmaker. The opportunities aren't there as much as they are for people who don't.
But we see that as you know, women, you know, filmmakers, we see that people of colour.
Yeah.
You know, we will always, while we are all a minority in this film sphere, we're always going to be labelled with the minority box that we're ticking, but that's not something to go, oh, God, they labelled me as that.
Look,
I'm proud to be a queer filmmaker and that is my story and my lens.
I see what Ophir is saying. There is something important about us not needing to box films in or to put cat labels on films, but
We need to. Our audience want us to as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely. And I think that's just human nature, isn't it? It is human nature to do that, whether we like it or not.
Let it go and make a good story.
And there are
plenty
of times when we don't like being labelled and we don't like being pigeonholed. But at the end of the day, I think you just need to accept who you are and own it. And
don't you?
That's why I think this queer phobia amongst some of these filmmakers really need to take a good look at them.
but no, it could be from his perspective, from where he's coming
and
from.
It's
he's not, you know, I say this from a Melbourne centric.
Yeah. And look, it's great to have different opinions canvassed on Outtakes. But obviously we support queer cinema as a type of cinema. And in fact, we're looking at another documentary next. The documentary is... Actually, that's not a documentary, so it's not another documentary, but we are turning our attention to a documentary screening at the Jewish International Film Festival. The documentary is The Last Goldfish. And this is a different... I mean, I think, Alan, you'd agree that it is a queer... You can classify this as a queer documentary in many ways.
Oh, without a doubt, on so many levels. I mean, here is this woman who is seeking her a sense of self, her identity. It's a journey of discovery in so many ways, and I think and at many times too. I mean, she's been othered so many times, and she also happens to be lesbian. But that's not the queerness of this film. So, I mean, it's such a touching. Well,
the documentary is her search for her family roots and this search for understanding and this kind of grappling with her history and where she came from. And she brings that to the screen and has brought us this documentary. For me, this is a story that, you know, a lot of people I was growing up with had similar experiences. But I know, Alan, for someone like you, this was eye-opening.
Well, I think it was very particular in that sense. Sue here she's the daughter of a Jewish man, but she doesn't find out that she's Jewish until much later on in her life.
Yeah.
And so she's been denied her Jewish heritage. Her family have essentially been kicked out of Trinidad and Tobago and they've come to Australia. And later on in her life, she finds out that her father was divorced and has had another family. So all these little family secrets come out. And as a result, you really start to begin to question your sense of self. I mean, who am I?
Well,
and I think this is what comes out in this film.
You can ask Sue who she is in a moment. We are speaking with Sue Goldfish, the director of The Last Goldfish, screening at GIFF. We are speaking with Sue right after this. You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are spotlighting queer Jewish cinema. And we're also celebrating the Jewish International Film Festival, which is screening at Lido and Classic Cinemas presently. And we're looking, we've chatted with Eddie Tamir, the festival director, who's told us a bit about a number of the films showing at the festival, including some obvious and not so obvious queer pickings. Mm-hmm. We've also heard from Ophir Greitzer, whose name, I'm sorry, Ophir, I'm sure I've mispronounced. Ophir is the director of The Cake Maker. And we now have on the phone Sue Goldfish, who is the director of The Last Goldfish, a documentary that is also screening at the Jewish International Film Festival. So thank you, Sue, for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sue, I have to say that this film, I found your film very touching. I just listening to your story and how this unfolds throughout the decades, really, even from when it starts from when you're a young girl up until you know the present day. It really struck an emotional chord with me, and at times I think I was, you know, a tear came to my eye, and especially
well, you did own up to it.
I did. Yes, I was tearing up.
No,
I was crying.
This is my greatest success. I am making men cry.
You've got to meet out Alan Arkina.
but yes, I think, you know, and while I was watching this, I was also struck not only by the particular circumstances of your family and your father in particular. I mean, it's a very real story of the Jewish experience in the Second World War. But I think it was sort of had broader themes from this in that in so many ways, all of us don't really know who our parents are. And there's so much that our parents don't tell us, that our parents might gloss over the truth or just tell us outright lies. And it's only until after they pass on that we actually really start to understand who they are and in a way, who we really are.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And, you know, it's been obviously a really long process called living my life. But in terms of making the film, I started 10 years after my father died, like really seriously writing the treatment, starting to approach it seriously as a feature documentary, trying to piece together all the bits that I'd need to be able to sort of represent this story and all its complexity. Because for me, it is just about complexity. Everyone's complexity, whether it's identity, history, memory, truth, it's about complexity.
And you know, that definitely came across, I think, in particular with all the twists and turns, like I just didn't know what was coming next. There always seemed to be another reveal. There was another reveal coming. You're like going, oh, my God. It's like another layer to the onion.
Yeah. I was kind of really hoping it was going to be a little bit like a James Bond movie, and it was just, you know, but documentary style and, you know, actually just personal story. And my girlfriend said that was completely ridiculous and it's nothing like a James Bond movie. But I did want to structure it so it was an adventure. Yes.
It was definitely like a whodunit.
It so it was an adventure. Yeah. And that you came with me, like one of the very first things that I did with the script editor was I changed all the language of the script from being kind of in the past till you get to a present and then go into a future. We started with the present. We basically, you know, you can open the shoebox with my, you know, the 14-year-old who finds out that her father was divorced. You can be with the 32-year-old when, you know, a grandson turns up and suddenly I find my brother and sister. So I think that has been one of the bits of feedback I've had, particularly that people really come with me as I move through, you know, that journey of discovery.
But you do take us on a journey of discovery with you, your journey of discovery. This is a very personal story. Mm. Did you have any hesitations about exposing yourself like this?
This is so weird, but not really. I don't know why, because, I mean, I might be now sort of kind of realising what I've done, you know, when I go to Q&As at film screenings. But, no, I think there was just, there's something about the way I live my life. It's fairly honest, and I'm a, you know, a kind of political animal in some ways, and the personal political. And I've also been a performer and a writer, and I've worked in the arts for a really long time. And I think, you know, artists, they often do find, you know, personal stuff is often where inspiration comes from.
Yeah.
But there's something comfortable about it. I don't really understand that. Maybe it's because I am the age I am. Maybe it's because I still don't have that much family. It's not like I've got children who are going to be, you know, devastated by me, you know, outing everything.
But that's what a good parent does.
Family secret.
You know, that's what a good parent must do, embarrass the next generation, I think, and give them a good story to then tell. Now, you are going to have a Q&A of The Last Goldfish at the festival on Sunday the 12th of November. Yep. I think that's after the documentary screening itself.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so
and
I'm
then
sure.
There's,
yes,
there's, And that one, this is a very full-on one, this one in Melbourne on this coming Sunday, because my partner, Deborah Kelly, like, her family comes from Melbourne, so this is going to be the first time that her family will have seen.
Oh, wow. So the pressure's on.
It's going to be a big, big night. It is on. I just hope they feel okay about it too.
Well, look, it's been a pleasure having you on the program, Sue. It has been a rush chat, but congratulations on putting this documentary together.
Thank you for making Alan cry.
Yes.
We try.
And good luck for the Q&A.
No problem.
It was a lovely film. It resonated with me on so many levels, so thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sue. And for people who do want to find out about when The Last Goldfish is showing, or indeed when any of the films that we've discussed this evening are showing, head to www.gif.com.au, where you can find the full program for the Jewish International Film Festival. Thank you again to Sue for joining us. Thank you to Ophir, and thank you very much to Eddie and Lindy Tamir from Classic Lido and Cameo for joining us. We have run right out of time, so that is it for another episode of Outtakes.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.